I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to minute 70 of season 6 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is John Parker of the Bat Minute. Na 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 na. Welcome back, John.
Hey, thank you for having me. Or as we say in Liverpool, all right there, lads. I'm not actually from Liverpool, but I'm not doing the voice.
Okay. No need. It's okay.
I might have been here for 17 years, but I'm not doing it.
Okay. That's fair. So minute 70 begins with Potter continuing to give George an offer that he hopes he won't refuse, and ends with Potter continuing to still try and butter up George. So yesterday we ended things with Potter basically telling George how much he means to the city and how, or town, and you know, and George is so intelligent, and you know, he thinks he's one of the only people who's on the same level as he is. And today he continues by saying, "Now I have stated my side very frankly. Now let's look at your side. Mm-hmm. Young man, 27, 28, married, making, say, $40 a week." So first of all, this is a very smug response, the way that he's saying it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And George doesn't really pick up on it. And once again, George is clueless.
He's too nice. He wouldn't see why somebody would be saying something negative like that.
Right. Yeah, that's true also. It's a very good point. I like the fact that he gets George's age right by saying that he's, you know, 27, 28. That is actually how old George is. I mean, George, as we know, was born in 1907. So if now is 1930, mm-hmm. 33, 34, he's somewhere in that range. 26, 27, 28. Again, we don't know the exact date of what's going on right now. So, but he's definitely in the right ballpark here.
Yeah, yeah.
How much do you think $40 in 1933 is worth in 2023?
Oh, whoa. $40 I'm going to think. Oh, that's a tough one.
No one ever said this was going to be easy coming on my show, John. Come on.
No, bloody hell. And let me see the dialogue again. How much was he doing? Was that per week?
He was saying $40 a week.
Let me think. I'm going to say, I don't know, 500?
Okay, it's worth $946.
Oh, whoa. Okay, more than I was expecting.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, yes. That's, I mean, obviously, if you've got a big family, that might not be the best. But to me, that's a lot of money. That's good, you know.
That's right.
I haven't got a family though. I have a cat sitting on my lap right now.
Okay, so you would be happy with that, with the equivalent of that $40 then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. That's good.
Exactly.
And but then again, we don't know. I know inflation and stuff, but other things, like other costs are different. You know, maybe it kind of doesn't work out the way we're thinking about it.
Right. And then George responds and goes, 45. And he says it in a very calm fashion also. You know, it's a very matter-of-factly. It's not $40. It's $45. Hey,
get it right. Get it right.
If you're gonna,
well, I think he wants to appear more successful. I mean, he's telling the truth. Yeah, it's $45, but he's like, no, get it right. Get it right. I do well. I make $45.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is definitely fair. You know, but making sure that he understands exactly what it is that you know, and how much do you think $45 is?
That extra $5 is going to be an insane amount, isn't it? It's going to be like another, I don't know, like another $100 added on, or $200 or something.
So it is a total of $1,065. So it's an extra $120.
There you go. See, that's nuts.
Yeah, it really is. It's nuts, so but it's amazing to think about. Exactly.
Yeah, like the way money changes is fascinating to me. You know, I love me punk rock and stuff. So, you know, I've got a lot of books on it, and you see, like in the books, they'll have like tickets, and it'll be like the Sex Pistols, the Clash, and Buzzcocks, all three on one gig, and it'll be like £2 for the tickets. What? These days, that would be like, if all the bands were still alive, you know, it would be hundreds.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's understandable. Potter responds, 45, 45. Out of which, after supporting your mother and paying your bills, you're able to keep, say, $10 if you skimp. So, again, he's starting to show how much he actually knows what's going on here.
That's a bit creepy. He's investigated him.
That's right. You know, as far as he's concerned, he knows that, you know, that George is you know, paying for his mother and things like that. So, I don't know. It's a little strange.
Yeah, I think he's had someone watching him.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's what he was doing.
He's got the money and the power.
He's definitely got the money and the power to do that. You know, and he apparently does. And I mean, he's done his research. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And then he continues and says, well, a child or two comes along and you won't even get to even save the $10. You know,
kids ruining everything.
That's right. Now, I mean, it goes back to what we were saying before about that. If $5 is $120 in today's, so it's close to $240. So that's already pretty amazing. You know, that what he's saying here is, you know, this $240 that you have, that you've been saving, your kids are going to take that ability away from you very quickly, which makes sense.
What's that? That makes sense. That's the first thing where I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that doesn't sound good. If that's like an average childcare kind of cost, then oh boy, yeah, that's taking a lot of money out of his pocket. He's right.
Right. But again, it makes sense. I mean, it is something that you know, people need to deal with.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You know, back then and even now.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cheap
to have a kid, you know?
Correct. And it makes sense. And then he continues and says to him, now, if this young man of 28 was a common, ordinary yokel. Now, I love the fact that he just uses that term, because that is not something that you would think that Henry Potter would say.
No.
It sounds... It sounds like it's something that would be more on the level someone who's on a less sophisticated level.
I think he's trying to speak George's language, almost. Yeah. Like, you're a normal person. This is how you lot speak.
Yeah. Maybe. Do you know what a yokel is?
Isn't it? I always hear it used as like a kind of... Like a countryside person, like a hillbilly, kind of a hick.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. You know, the idea basically is a yokel is a derogatory term referring to the stereotype of unsophisticated country people. And
I'm trying to think if we have an equivalent of that here. I mean, we've got that equivalent person, like people who live down in, like, we've got places like Cornwall and that. And I suppose that's the equivalent we would have. People would stereotype them that sort of a way. But I don't know if we have a word for it, really. English listeners are probably shouting at me, going, yeah, we do.
You know, usually, yokels are people that are depicted as straightforward, simple, naive, and easily deceived, failing to see through false pretenses. They're also depicted as talking about simple topics like cows, sheep, goats, wheat, alfalfa, fields, crops, tractors, and pretty much nothing else. They're portrayed as unaware or uninterested in the world outside of their surroundings. Now, this is something that's related to you. In the UK, yokels are traditionally depicted as wearing the old West Country dress of a straw hat and white smock, chewing or sucking a
1,000%,
piece of straw, and carrying a pitchfork or a rake, listening to grumpy and Western music.
Absolutely. That's how I picture them. There used to be a comedian who his whole character was, he just looked like that when he was doing his comedy. Yeah, because and he put, I think he was from the West Country, but he would put the accent on more. He would exaggerate it a bit, you know, to be like playing up stereotypes. But, you know, if you're making stereotypes of your own people, that's fine. That's different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're allowed to do that.
That's right. And then it says here, yokels are portrayed as living in rural areas of Britain, such as the West Country, East Anglia, the Yorkshire Dales, and Wales. They speak with country dialects from various parts of Britain.
Yeah, they're quite, the accents are quite strong. Right. It's hard enough for us to understand them.
Yeah. Okay, that's
cool.
Fair.
You know, yeah,
that's fair.
It's all differences. I like embracing differences, you know.
That's right. And synonyms for yokel include bubba, country bumpkin, hayseed, chaw bacon, rube, redneck, hillbilly, and hick.
Yeah, I've heard of most of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a band. I think they might actually be English, right? Which is controversial because they're playing Americans. There's a band. They do AC/DC covers, but they're hicks. So they're called Hayseed Dixie. And they do, yeah, it's like country-fied AC/DC songs. It's the weirdest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. not familiar. So basically, you know, he just refers to him as a you know, what if he's not some your typical ordinary yokel, but if he was, I'd say he's doing fine. But George Bailey is not a common ordinary yokel. He's an intelligent, smart, ambitious young man who hates his job, who hates the building and loan almost as much as I do. A young man who's been dying to get out of this, get out on his own ever since he was born. A young man, smartest one of the crowd, mind you, and watch his friends, and then he gets cut off. But again, it goes back to the fact that he really has done his homework here.
Yeah, he knows what George wants to hear.
That's right. I mean, I guess that is part of the idea of being a good businessman, you know, knowing what your crowd wants to hear.
Yeah. That's the one thing you can say about Potter, right? Love him or hate him, he is a good businessman.
Correct.
He makes money, which is kind of the objective, you know?
Correct. So. He's a conniving businessman, but, you know, he's still is good at what he does, even if he needs to sometimes use nefarious ways to get what he wants.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he's exaggerating, you know, George's condition, let's say. Because he's like, okay, you hate your job. And it's like, well, he doesn't hate it. He doesn't want to be doing it. But he's like, no, you hate it. He wants to make him feel even worse about it in that moment.
That's right.
Because he's got problems with it, you know, and he wants to leave, but hate's a strong word. But no, he plant that seed in his head. Plant
That's
that
right.
seed.
Inception.
Exactly.
That would be a cool idea. Inception in It's a Wonderful Life. You know, have a crossover.
Bring it on. Yeah.
Why not?
Again, this is what this new technology is for CGIing dead people into your movies.
That's right. I mean, I think it's it comes down to the fact that it's, you know, George isn't offended by him saying this. We don't see on his face, you know, like, how do you know all this? It must be something that everybody knows.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's aware that George doesn't want to be here, that George does not like to feel alone, that George wants to somehow get to, you know, travel the world and stuff like that. So it's it's interesting that Potter is using this to throw it back in his face.
Well, I think George kind of goes inside. He goes like, yeah, there is some truth to what he's saying, though. You know, he's not just being mean or anything. He's like, yeah, I do kind of want to leave.
Right. I mean, it's a very interesting way to, you know, for Potter to try to outsmart George here. You know, that's what he's ultimately trying to do here. You know, he wants to make sure
he's close to getting it.
That's right. And, you know, by telling George the things that everyone seems to know, including Potter, you know, seems to be the way to do this.
Yeah.
Which is really fascinating to look at. To watch the way that this is being done.
It's manipulative, but is it wrong? Not necessarily, you know.
Right.
He's just talking.
Right. I mean, the last shot of this minute, we see George's face and he looks a little uncomfortable. But the question is he uncomfortable because he sees that Potter knows him so well, or is he uncomfortable because this is the truth?
I'm going to give you the boring fence-sitting answer, and I'll say I think it's both at once. I think he's like, oh, whoa, how did you know that? And also, you do know that. That is true. Like, you're not lying.
Right. Okay. I mean, that's fair. That's definitely fair to look at it from that perspective.
Well, because as, you know, not to spoil things, listeners, but as you're about to see, he's very close to going, yeah, okay, let's do it.
Right. I mean, again, that we'll deal with next week with, you know, how Potter continues to try to butter him up here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it goes to show that, you know, once again, how intelligent and smart Potter is, that this is the tactic that he's taken on.
Yeah, you get the impression this isn't the first time he's had conversations like this. He does this all the time.
Correct. And finally, I mean, this is his way to try to, you know, take his biggest, I don't know if you want to call him his enemy, but his biggest competitor,
mm-hmm.
and find a way to deal with him.
Yeah, and because he knows, like, if I just go and if I fight him, not literally, obviously, but if I fight him, I might not win. But if I treat him well and give him what he thinks he wants, that's how I win.
Right. Okay, and that works. And, I mean, or it seems to be working here. Because, you know, I guess the idea is that he's supposed to make George feel like he's nothing before he's now about to build him up.
Mm.
You know, I think that's what it is. He's going to bring him down as far as possible before he's about to build him back up and say, hey, you know, I have an offer for you.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I like that. I like that.
It's a great scene. It's a great conversation.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, people in psychology classes or maybe business classes use this scene.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, because it really plays out well. And, I mean, I haven't given him enough credit, but, you know, I love the fact that we see the guy, the bodyguard, standing behind him the entire time. I mean, this whole week we've seen him every time we see Potter, we see this guy just standing there frozen behind him.
You know what? That's actually fascinating. I think this would be interesting for people to study. We've spoken all week, and we haven't mentioned that guy.
That's
what,
right.
What, I think because Potter is such a compelling kind of character, you're focusing on everything he's doing and saying, and there's this looming guy in the background being intimidating without intimidating, if you know what I mean. He's not doing anything. He's just there. You know?
That's right.
It's the implication.
Right. Do you think that, I mean, he's there as a bodyguard because he thinks that someone is going to possibly attack him?
It could be that. It definitely could be. I see it as like, yeah, it's a way of, of intimidating in meetings without Potter having to say anything and be mean and shout. He's like, no, just you stand there and look massive and scary. And that does it all. It's the psychological impact of that, and it's the power thing again. Look, I've got people looking out for me. You can't do anything to me.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So the actor who plays him, who plays the bodyguard, his name is Frank Hagney. He was born in 1884 and passed away in 1973. He lived to the age of 89. He was originally born in Australia before moving to the States. Okay, you're gonna be blown off your chair at this point. How many IMDb credits do you think this guy has?
Okay, since you're asking that, it's either really high or really low. It's got to be one of the two.
It is one of the two. I will give you that.
I'm gonna say
it's one of the two.
I'm gonna say one. I'm gonna say this is it.
No, he has 451 IMDb credits.
Whoa, holy crap.
I got to say, I don't think I've seen this number so high. I've seen people in the 300s, but I don't recall seeing someone who's had 451. I mean, that's just amazing.
Are they like big role?
No, they're all little roles.
Are they like big roles or are they like goon and bodyguard?
They're all little roles. Minor... bartender, minor, watchman, gunman, bartender.
There's nothing wrong with that, but the thinking was like, surely that's the only way to rack up that many. If you were starring in stuff, you haven't got the time.
That's right. But I mean, that's just an amazing number. Wow.
Yeah.
I should be keeping track of this to see like who has the most.
Actually, please do make a ranking. I'm that lame. I would make like a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. He was also a stuntman and a professional boxer.
Oh.
And he was the sparring partner of heavyweight Jack Johnson.
Oh. Okay. That's impressive as well.
Yeah. He played Indians, gang members, and lawmen in westerns over the years.
Oh. Back when it was absolutely fine for a random like white guy to play a Native American, yeah.
Well, he was Australian, so I don't know. Maybe that gives him some possibility.
Somehow that seems just as bad because you know Australians were. Yeah, I love Australia, I do, but you know, hasn't got the best history with the you know Aboriginal people.
That's right.
Says me from England, who treated most of the world terribly.
There you go. Okay. All right. So, John, you have anything else you want to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
No, I think I've definitely done all for the minute, and I think I've hit on everything for the movie in general. I love it. I love it. And thank you for making it easy for me to watch again. Because, you know, not to be too personal, but, you know, it was difficult for the last couple of years to watch this because I had such associations with the so this gave me a real good reason to watch it, and it's back in my yearly rotation, baby.
I'm glad that you were able to break out of that, and I appreciate that. I appreciate being able to help.
Hey.
Exactly. All right, so every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. So the idea behind this segment is that over the 95 years of Oscar, there have been many different calls that different people, some people think were the right ones and some people think were the wrong ones. And, you know, we all have them. And there are people who say that this movie should have, you know, won Best Picture over the best years of our lives. There's some people who don't. Doesn't it? We're not going there at this point. And the whole
idea, quality. Yeah,
exactly. And so basically the idea is that every week my guest will tell me their top five movies that they think should have won Best Picture that didn't win. Now, obviously, it has to actually be a movie that was nominated for Best Picture. Yeah. You can't say that every Batman movie should have won, you know. Because the only one that came close was The Dark Knight. And, you know, and if that would have been, you know, on the chopping block that year, it definitely, in my opinion, would have won. But, you know, it wasn't. So yeah. I can't even go there.
I get why it wasn't, though, because the Academy, I mean, it's if they're ever going to embrace superhero movies, I know that some of them have won awards now, but they're looked down on, aren't they?
Yes.
I think it's going to take time for them to go, no, hang on, they're the same as every other movie. You know?
Yeah.
Correct. I do have a good selection, I think. It might be a bit different to some people, I'm hoping, fingers crossed.
Well, that's the idea, isn't it? I've got a few. We're looking for a little bit of diversity in choices.
Yeah, people might think I'm a bit strange for some of them. I don't care.
Well, we all think you're strange, so that's fine.
Well, I'm strange at the best of times. I mean, come on, I'm a punk rocker who does drag and hosts three podcasts for some reason. Stupid.
We're all crazy.
Now, the first few of them I sort of haven't ranked as such because they were kind of tied in my mind, you know.
No, but you gotta rank them so that I can give them, you know, so I can give them points.
Okay. I can do that then. Okay, so first off, then number five, I will put Forrest Gump beating Pulp Fiction was wrong to me. I want Pulp Fiction to win that, and I'm not even a Gump hater, right? It's cool now to hate Gump. I don't hate it. I just don't. I don't think it's doing anything new. It's just it's like a nice emotional story. Okay, Pulp Fiction. Who's ever seen a movie like that?
Beforehand, no one. After, there are many attempts.
too many after, yeah. But, like, to completely reinvent, I don't even like gangster movies. To reinvent gangster kind of movies like that, and it's like that's revolutionary to me. It's unbelievable. Great movie. It's not even my favorite Tarantino. Should have won an Oscar. I'm one of those weird people who I actually like a lot of the later Tarantino more. I'm strange. Like, I'm very much in the camp of Kill Bill and Inglourious Basterds, those movies.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I love Pulp Fiction as well. It's great. So that one, I'd say next I would go, I'm going to put Black Klansman should have beaten Green Book.
Okay.
I think Black Klansman is one of the best movies of the last 15 years. It upset me greatly. Green Book I found very average, run-of-the-mill, paint-by-numbers. It was made to win an Oscar, wasn't it? You can tell immediately. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, you've made this because you won an Oscar. And that year as well, you also had The Favourite. That was another great top contender. That should have also been ahead of Green Book. What on earth? Amazing movie. But Black Klansman, that is such a – that's another one. It's doing something very different, very new. And even the way that movie ends is nuts as well. It just – oh, yeah, by the way, here's a bunch of real-life modern footage. It's like, what? Wasn't expecting that.
That's right.
But yeah, Green Book, just boring, really. It's like, okay, fine. So I guess then number three, I will put – that Fargo should have beat The English Patient. English Patient again, fine, nothing wrong with it. It's all right. Do I sit and talk about it and think about it and rewatch it? No, I don't. Fargo, I watch that all the time. Fargo's so good, there's now a TV show of it.
I still haven't had a chance to watch any of those episodes. I keep wanting to, but I just never get around to it.
Well, of any season. You haven't even seen season.
I haven't seen any season. I really want to. You know, I'm more of a movie person. I need to find, you know, because I'm a completionist, as I keep mentioning. Yeah. So if I start watching a TV show, I have to watch the whole season at once. You know.
Yeah. No, I'm very similar. I'm very similar. So it has to be something special when it's a show for me.
That's right. And for me also, when there are TV shows, like even the latest Star Wars shows and the Marvel shows and all those things, I have to wait until they finish and then I'll watch them because I don't want to watch them weekly. You know, I want to be able to.
You want to get into like a flow.
That's right.
Well, Fargo goes above and beyond though, because it takes the concept of the movie, the core kind of idea, and remixes it. It's not like a remake of the movie or anything, the first season. It's like, no, let's do something similar. Something similar happens to this character, but it's not the same. It's a difference. And then each season after that's completely different. It goes really, like, weird. It's a very weird show. But the original movie there, I think that's another masterpiece. But I also know why it didn't win an Oscar. It's right. Not an Oscar movie, is it? It's weird. It's dark. It's comic at the same time as being about murders. And it's The English Patient is an obvious Oscar choice yet again, a bit like Green Book. You're like, yeah, okay, of course that was going to win. That was always going to win, wasn't it? Boring. And there's a trend to these because the next one is exactly the same. I was very upset. The King's Speech winning over Black Swan, because I think Black Swan, that's another one of my favorite movies of the last 15, 20 years. I think it's very reminiscent of like a David Lynch film, something like that. It's very, very dark, and not just because the swan's black. It's like, it's really harrowing. It's like a horror movie without it being horror, if you know what I mean.
It's, yeah.
It's so messed up, and the ending is just, whoa, blows you away. Everything about it's memorable. I think about that movie all the time, and I've only watched it a couple of times, but it regularly pops into my mind. The visuals, everything. Incredible performances. King's Speech, oh, right, great. It's about that monarch who couldn't talk very well, and then he learned to talk better. Yay. Wonderful. The Black Swan is about the soul and everything, and about all kinds of stuff. There's like multi-layers to that movie. King's Speech, I just, even as a history buff, you know, it's not that exciting.
Right. I mean, I'm not a Darren Aronofsky fan. The only movie of his that I love, and it's very weird. I dislike every one of his movies except for one. The Wrestler is the only one that I really love.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's one of my favorites as well, because I'm, as a wrestling geek, that appealed to me on many levels. But I'm a huge fan of all of his movies. So, it's interesting. That one actually does feel the least like one of his films.
Maybe that's why I like it.
Yeah, I could see that. See, I like all of them. The weirdest ones, the lot, you know.
See, that's the thing. I find them to be too weird. They're too weird for me.
They are completely bonkers. They will never appeal to everybody. A mass audience. Maybe that's why it didn't get an Oscar. But then the Oscars don't really care about mass audiences a lot of the time.
No.
They do their own thing. They've got their own criteria.
Correct.
And I thought Black Swan would hit that criteria, but meh. I suppose it's the recipe, isn't it? If your character's got some kind of mild disability, they go, Oscar, there you go. You can't speak properly. Here you go, Oscar.
Well, I mean, come on. Natalie Portman did win Best Actress for her work there.
Yeah, I'm glad for that, because that was well deserved. Absolutely, she looks like she's actually having a breakdown in that. She might have well been doing that. I don't
know. Very possibly. Yeah.
but then number one. Oh God, this one. I'm still angry about this. And there's two movies I think could have won this. I can't fully decide. Basically, Shakespeare in Love won an Oscar over two movies that I think are amazing again. Saving Private Ryan. Like, I don't care if it's American, like, jingoistic movie. It's great. It's great. I don't care. Brilliant. But Life is Beautiful as well. It's the Italian one.
Well, you got to choose one of them. How? You got to choose one of them.
I'm going to pick then, just because I'm going to go with Life is Beautiful, because that's a more Oscar-y movie. That had more chance of winning, I think. Saving Private Ryan, it's a war movie. Oscar is a bit hit and miss with war, isn't it? But Life is Beautiful is about the war, but it's so much more than that, you know. I don't know how Life is Beautiful doesn't win that. They did win some awards, if I remember.
It won Best Actor and...
Was it Best Actor?
It won Best Actor and maybe Best... maybe Best Screenplay or something like that? I'm trying to remember.
What?
Oh, no, it won Best... I mean, that's good. It won Best Foreign Film.
See, so I guess they didn't want to give it both, maybe. That was the thought process, which I can kind of understand. Okay, give it to Saving Private Ryan.
No, but you have to also look at the situation back then. It was very, very rare for a foreign film to win Best Picture. That's why they have Best Foreign Film, or Best Non-English Absolutely. Language Film. You know, so
to even be nominated is amazing, to be honest. Yeah,
correct. I mean, if you look back at the history of Oscar, there are very few. I think there's like been 12 foreign films that have been nominated, and most of them have been within the last decade.
Yeah, it's very recent phenomenon, isn't it?
Yeah,
which is great. I love to see it, but right. It's a shame.
So it won three Oscars. It won Best Foreign Language Film, Best Original Dramatic Score Music, and it won Best Actor. It lost.
He had to win Best Actor for that.
That's right. It lost Best Film Editing. Best screenplay written directly for the screen, Best Director, and Best Picture. Those are the ones that lost.
But I love showing someone that film who's never seen it before. Because when I tell them there's a tonal shift, I don't think they're expecting the level of tonal shift.
Correct.
To go from a nice romantic slapstick comedy to a harrowing
Nazi movie.
And even when you tell people it's got that in it, they still don't expect it to hit as much as it hits. You know, it's like, correct. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
it's literally one of the most tear-inducing films ever made.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. It's a great movie.
But I actually didn't watch it by choice originally. My school made me watch it. I was in a film class, and that was put on, and I was like, oh, this is going to be boring. What, like an Italian like comedy? That's what it seemed like at first. And by the end, I loved it that much. I went and bought the DVD that day.
Oh wow, that's amazing.
I was like, yep, that's it. This is perfect. Thank you so much, teacher.
Oh wow, very cool. All right, so John, would you like to once again tell people where they can find John Parker?
Yeah, come and listen to all of my shows. I've got Bat Minute about Batman, surprise, surprise. Miami Minutes about Miami Connection. And Hedwig Inch by Angry Inch about the musical Hedwig and the Angry Inch. So just put that in. I'm on Spotify, iTunes. It's not even called iTunes anymore, is it? Was it Apple Podcasts? Everything. Find me everywhere, and yeah, that's probably the best thing. I mean, I'm on all social media myself as well if you want to speak to me. I'm under my stage name of Cantina Turner because we are a dinner lady themed band, so you can find me under that on most social media.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, John, I've had a great time this week. I really appreciate you joining me. I hope you enjoyed yourself too.
I did indeed. I had the best time.
The best time. Wow. Now you're starting to sound like Potter. you don't have to go all out. That's fine. All right. Great. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. Everyone have a great weekend. And until Monday, hot dog.
Hot dog!
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.